pleased to be joined this afternoon by friend of the show, legendary broadcaster, NFL executive, scout, author. He has done it all in his years, and we always love having him visit with us. Upton Bell joining us this afternoon. Good day, sir.
Good day. You could add also son and grandson of legendary politicians. And that's why I love politics so much. Grandfather, attorney general, uncle, attorney general, governor, and chief justice, Supreme Court, who, by the way, served with Derek Bach's father.
Oh, wow.
So I've always had a great love of politics. It was discussed every night along with sports at the dinner table. And I would just like to say quickly, I hope that Maine brings in somebody else other than Susan Collins, because they need a Margaret Chase Smith, somebody who has enough guts to stand up and say, this is not right. I won't vote for a Supreme Court justice until a president, new or Trump, is appointed.
Well, and we have been hearing for years that Senator Collins has this tremendous level of influence in Washington. And I guess if she believes so strongly that this is something that shouldn't be done, then, gosh, I would think she would use that influence to convince some of her colleagues to vote along with her and delay this process until after January.
Rich, we probably will never learn, maybe for years, why so many Republicans let Trump cow them. I mean, they had and still have all the power, whether it was impeachment or many of the bills. And I'll tell you one thing. If I were a resident of Maine or anywhere in this country, I would ask myself why I would vote for anybody in the middle of something that is the American Depression. I lived as a child through it. We are in a depression, and they are going home for a month until after the election without voting in a bill to let all the people in Maine out of work, needing money. This is not only Maine, around the country, and they are going home. That's a bigger disgrace than the Supreme Court. That's a bigger disgrace than Trump claiming he isn't going to leave the presidency. It's on a par in some ways with all the people that died, because you know what? A lot more people are going to die, and a lot more people are going to be depressed and out of money because they chose to go home without taking care of the people of Maine.
Well, you're absolutely right. And Trump, as many have said, is just a symptom of the problem. And the problem is that both parties have been unresponsive and out of touch and too busy arguing political points to get anything done. And in the midst of all this, we're also seeing protests, that really the likes of which we haven't seen in more than 50 years in this country. And we've talked with you in the past about your work in the South during the 1960s, looking to recruit football players and what you had to deal with as you confronted racism firsthand there. And I guess there was a time we thought we were on track to solving the problems of race in this country, but it's become clear, Upton, that we're not even close.
It could be worse. I lived through the 60s. I was in cities where there were cities on fire. There were all sorts of problems. I happened to be in Memphis the day that Martin Luther King was murdered. I was outside of Selma, Alabama, the day that Martin Luther King and the great John, our man, who was gassed and beaten on that bridge. So, you know, when you look at it, people like John Lewis, Martin Luther King, I mean, they were and are icons. But what I learned in the South, Rich, is, and I think if I went back today, even though there have been many changes, there are two laws, one for a white person and one for an African-American. I saw that early and often, and I don't think much of that has changed, including, yes, like the Attorney General of Louisville, Kentucky, yesterday, African-American. But the thing is, people just can't get out of their minds. And that's not only in the South. The idea that an African-American is a white person's equal. It is ingrained from the very beginning. I saw that. I learned, if you're not careful, when I was there, as I've told people, and you didn't say right away that I'm a scout for the Baltimore Colts, they would have thought that I was somebody coming down there to register African-Americans to vote. And I would have been dead the next day, because there's still a series in parts of the South of small towns. You pull in there, and you're stopped by the police. And the police want to know, what are you doing there? And if you don't give them the right answers, you might never leave there. So it's a reality, and it's a terrible thing. And, of course, the person who allegedly leads the country is stoking the fires of racism. I claim, Rich, that if Trump were not the president, anybody but Trump, either party, you would not see this type of violence that we're seeing today. Would you see some? Yes. Would you see the problems of a terrible pandemic? But if I put Rich Kimball in as president tomorrow, we would be a lot better off. We would be dealing with 200,000 people dead that are just being ignored by Trump. But more importantly, or just as important, is the racial strife is being stoked from the White House. That has never happened before.
No, and you're absolutely right about that, except the part about me being president. But no, we've always had presidents, even ones that I didn't agree with or you didn't agree with. But I always felt that whoever was in that job, look, even Nixon, before we learned some of what he was up to, was able to rise above some of their personal concerns and do what they felt was best for the country. And every president up until this one found a way to unite the country in times of hardship.
Rich Nixon's impeachment, he had to resign. Nixon's crimes against the country are child's play to what is going on today. And all of I posed the thing on Twitter the other day. I said, what's the difference between Hitler's rallies in Nuremberg and Trump rallies? And I said, the only difference is the crowd size. If you were to play that of all of those rallies that Hitler had and see the Trump rally, understanding, yes, there is a difference. But if you played them back to back, you'd say to yourself, if you didn't know who the people were, you'd say, what's the difference? We are sowing hate. I don't care what the party is. I'm an independent. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. But what has happened here is we all better be very careful. Even the supporters of Trump in Maine, you better be careful, because you might wake up one day and find out you lost your country.
Well, you're right. I think we're realizing how fragile democracy is when, and again, I think a lot of this is typical bluster with Trump, trying to distract from the headlines of the week, like bad poll numbers and crossing that threshold of 200,000 Americans dead. And so often he says things that are designed to draw attention to them, but there's always a nugget of truth in there as well, and it's clear that he knows the election is not going well, and he doesn't want to face the consequences of what happens if he leaves office.
I think you're absolutely right about that, but here's the problem, and what I've learned over a period of years. We are in the media. We deal with people every day in every aspect of life, whether it's your show that deals with everything, movies, politics, sports, but we watch this stuff all day. I've got three TV sets, so I'm watching constantly everything. But when Trump says things that are untrue, or we know he's trying to take the public's mind off 200,000 deaths and how he played a large part in that, is the average American that's out there that has two jobs and a family and trying to support himself or herself, they don't see it every day like we do. And they're not able to be quite as cynical. So if they hear something, they pick it up on TV, mm-hmm. they hear it on the radio, just bits and pieces, they believe it. That's the danger. Most Americans don't sit and read two or three papers or go online or watch television or listen to radio like, let's say, we do. And so, therefore, Trump is counting on the fact that he can lie every day, thousands of lies over a period of almost 4 years, and there'll be a certain element that will say, right on, brother. And that's our danger.
You're absolutely right. We're talking with Upton Bell here on Downtown. Always good to get your perspective on what's going on in the nation, but also wanted to ask you about it because you've seen so much of the history of the National Football League. We lost one of the all-time greats earlier this week. Can you talk a little bit about the great Gale Sayers?
I will, and I will say this. One of the things that I'm happy that I was born and lived in an era for not only football but all sports, that as I see the passing or the stories about them, I can relate personally to the story. In the case of the Kansas Comet, as he was called, Gale Sayers, I saw him and scouted him in college when he was at Kansas. And then later on, when he was drafted in the greatest first-round draft in the history of pro football, Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers, both in the first round, both first ballot Hall of Famers. The thing about Sayers was that I've never seen in any other back was his ability to make a cut on a dime. And he was 6'1", 195, which was fairly big for a back then. He was somewhat of a long strider. But, Rich, he would start out one way at full speed, never stopping, and make cuts like you've never seen. We were playing in what turned out now to be a historic game in a historic 1965 season where we went all the way down to a kick that was no good in a playoff game against the Packers, or we would have been champions. But the game that started it all, where Tom Matte ended up being the quarterback after Unitas and Gary Clauso went down, we were playing the Bears in Baltimore in November. We had a game and a half lead of the Packers. And into town came Butkus, the Bears, and Sayers. I was on the sideline watching it. There was a toss from the quarterback by a toss, just a little pitch, as the running back is starting right. And that was Sayers. He starts right. He cuts back left. This is in the backfield. He then gets around the left side, which would be his right end. He then made three or four other tacklers miss. He cuts back across the field again. Then he comes back across the field. And I have never seen a run like that. He ran for, I think it was a 59-yard touchdown. But as Bill Curry, I think, said the other day in a commentary, he said, I remember Gale Sayers. Well, I saw him twice on one run, and again, I saw him cut back almost back to the line of scrimmage and pass Bubba Smith and went back to me again. You had to see this run to really believe what this person was like. I've never seen a back like him, as I said, on full stride making cuts. Go back in history, including Jimmy Brown, all the greats that I've seen ever did that. The real sad part of it was, in those days, the game was much rougher than today. You could probably club a person to death and get away with it. Today it's much different. Players are bigger, stronger, quicker, but the game is much less brutal. In the case of the Bears, where they made a mistake is they played him everywhere. He was a running back. He returned punts. He returned kickoffs. And as a result, you knew sooner or later he was going to be injured, and he was seriously cut what could have been a 10, 12, maybe even 15-year career what's short. If he was playing today, you could play him as a receiver, get thrown to him out of the backfield. You could run the football with him in any which way you wanted to. Then they took advantage of all of that, but as a result, a great meteor, as I called it, its lights were put out.
Upton, if you were an NFL general manager today, who would you prefer to have at quarterback right now and going forward, Tom Brady or Cam Newton?
Cam Newton, no question in my mind. And as soon as they signed him, and you know, a lot of people are saying, by the way, Rich, why did they wait so long if they were so convinced on him? Well, was it a money game played that people may or may not realize? And in this case, it's typical Belichick. If you study his past history, he waits till he thinks he can get the best bargain. Now, sometimes it backfires on him. I don't think Belichick ever really worried that much. You say, is his arm strength going to come back? Is he fully recovered from his knee injury and the other problems he had? But I thought Belichick was playing two games. One, the game on the field, is he healthy? But more importantly, what can I get him for? And of course, he got him cheaply. Here's the difference. And I think, by the way, Brady made a mistake. But in the case of Brady and Belichick, it was like a bad marriage. It had to end, and Brady was going to be on his way. But here's the thing that I would look at as a general manager or a personnel director. Assuming that if Newton can come back even 50-60%, he's only 31.
Right.
His career, barring injury like everything else, is still ahead of him in spite of all the things that he's been through. In Brady's case, even if he goes all the way to the Super Bowl, which he won't, his career is ending. It's like anything else. There's a time when you're finished as an athlete. So in the case of Newton, the other thing for Newton is it's given him a whole new perspective. He's finally getting, and this is not a knock against Ron Rivera, but he's getting a disciplined coach in Belichick and McDaniels that wouldn't put up with any crap, you know, you can just go run around and do what you want. And he appreciates. The other thing that you're getting with him, even though he's in the past always said, you know, he's a show up and this and that, he's put excitement into the football team. It's coming out of a pandemic with the future never assured of work stoppages where 5-7 of your players decide to opt out, and he's giving them a whole new life. I thought the game Sunday against Seattle, even though the defense didn't look very good, that was a tremendous football game, whether you're looking at it technically or not. It was a comeback. In some ways, even though Pete Carroll made a big mistake on 3rd-and-1, but that's Pete. What a comeback. Yes, they lost. But you feel good that if you can keep him healthy, that you've got a bargain. You've got a guy that if you start to pay him, and we'll see what happens with that, you've got a guy maybe the next 5 or 6 years. You can bring in a new quarterback or try to develop Stidham. But you've got somebody that gives you time. And therefore, I think it's an absolutely brilliant move. And I think people, assuming that he stays healthy, are going to love this guy.
Upton, we've talked with you earlier in the summertime about what pro sports teams should have done, how they might have handled the pandemic better. But I wanted to ask you about those college football teams, mostly the FBS schools, the big conferences that are out there playing. Is this a mistake for them to be having their seasons?
Totally cynical. And I don't care what Nick Saban says or the LSU coach or Bo or any of these other, and this includes, by the way, Boston College. I heard they're a person on the other day, not from the football team, their PR guy for the college, when people question that many of the students couldn't get tested but the football team could, or they could get tested much more than the other people. And his explanation was, well, we belong to a conference, and this is what they want us to do. And I say, BS, the difference is, you're pro, you're being paid to play, and you accept the dangers if that's what you agree to. A college football player has no choice. Now, some of them have said you can opt out if you want to. But if you opt out, you lose a season maybe of eligibility, and you're not the same in the coach's eyes. The control they have over those kids is absolute. I think it is cynical. I am totally against it. Those frauds at the Big Ten now saying they're going to come back, they're all looking at one thing, which the pros do, but the pros have an excuse. It's the bottom line, Rich. It's Ohio State saying, oh, my God, we're going to lose millions of dollars. It's Birmingham and Tuscaloosa saying, all of our economy is duped around game day. And it is, because I've been to those places. But on the other hand, there's no thought to the poor bastards that have to play.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Always great to get the perspective of Upton Bell here on Downtown. If you haven't already, read his wonderful book with Ron Borges, Present at the Creation. Upton, thank you so much, as always, for making some time for us. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk with you again very soon.
Go Maine. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you,
Upton. Get her out.
Upton Bye. Bell on Downtown.